Hello, I'm Rosie Goldsmith, and this is the Commonwealth Writers Podcast, celebrating 10 short story writers from 5 regions of the Commonwealth. We're calling it 10 by 10, which means I've got 10 minutes to talk to each author. Today, we're hearing from Lorna Goodison, the Jamaican writer. Now, Lorna, you are sitting on the other end of a line. I'm here in London. If we're going to give a quick picture of who you are, what you are to everybody listening, if I were to say poet, painter, short story writer, traveller, teacher, Jamaican, does that sort of sum it up, do you think? Is that fair enough?
All of the above, yes, that's right.
How do you describe yourself?
Somehow or the other, I always go back to Jamaica or I refer to it somewhere along the way. I didn't leave Jamaica until I was in my early 20s. I went to New York to study art, but I did. I grew up in Jamaica, I would say, for the first 20 years of my life. I also have a bit of difficulty with things like, you know, people talk about they're in exile and I don't understand those terms. I can be in Jamaica in a matter of a few hours. If I get to Miami, I'm in Jamaica in an hour and a bit.
Yeah, I mean, you're called the Grand Dame of Jamaican literature.
Really?
yes, indeed, you are. When you started off writing in Jamaica, I mean, you were born in 1947 and you've written from a very young age. I mean, what was it like in Jamaica in those days when you first started writing?
Well, the beautiful thing about it is that I was not writing for anybody but myself. I started off for many years just doing, having this lovely relationship with writing, with reading, and then I started off as a reader, as every writer does. I grew up reading people like O. Henry and Somerset Maugham. The first story I remember writing had to do with a wedding that was held at our house. And it was a wedding between the man who sold us yams and a lady who was very badly crippled. And I just wanted to write the story down. And I always felt I was reading these stories in books. And I felt that the stories around me were just as interesting, but they weren't in books. So maybe I just wrote them down for myself. I think I started off writing what I wanted to read.
And what happened later? Do you think that you started writing differently?
Yes, I became more conscious of form as I went along. I also wanted to tell stories that reflected the way Jamaicans tell stories. You know, there's not usually an omniscient narrator in our stories. There's somebody who was a part of the truth, and then there's a lot of conjecture. And sometimes the stories has more than one ending. So I've very much tried to write my stories in ways that, you know, reflect the way Jamaicans typically will tell a story.
Jamaica's had a very difficult past. I don't need to tell you that. Do you still feel you need to write about that? And how difficult is it writing about tragedy and trauma?
Terrible. It's very hard. It used to be worse for me. I used to actually sometimes end up worn out and I'd be weeping when I'd be writing some of these things. But I think with experience, I think it's just a matter of being able to survive. If I were going to be totally devastated every time I wrote about something tragic, it would be bad for me. So I think I've developed a measure of, you know, just some sort of distance on some subjects. I can write about them, but it doesn't devastate me for days.
If we look at some of those difficult issues, I mean, the issues of the past, which still have an awful resonance today, and slavery and genocide and colonisation, and what would you say are the issues today that devastate you?
The after effects, the lingering after effects of some of those things. But also, for me, there's a way in which we've turned some of these terrible things in on ourselves. And, you know, the level of violence, the level of disrespect, lack of love, really. Just the fact that sometimes we don't seem to love ourselves. And that is made manifest in some really bizarre things, you know, like people bleaching their skin or, you know, there's a genre of music that just really is just specializes in violence and disrespect to women. And I don't know, and the women like it. So that is bad.
Do you call yourself a feminist writer or a black feminist writer? I mean, so many other people call you that.
Let me tell you, I learned about the healing power of stories from listening to my mother and her friends. My mother was a wonderful dressmaker, and her sewing room would be filled with women, and they'd come in, and very often somebody would have a problem, something to do with a child or a partner or something, money, work, whatever. But what would happen is that she would say what was wrong, and then somebody would say, let me give you a story. They said, let me give you a story. They'd never say, no, I'm telling you a story. They said, I'm going to give you a story. And I think I took that to mean that a story was something that was given you to help you. In much the same way that poetry and all of literature is something is given us to help make our lives easier, you know.
Do you give women stories? Is that when somebody calls you a woman's writer, is that what you're doing? You're giving women stories?
Yes, ma'am. Without a doubt. My very first book of short stories was called Baby Mother and the King of Swords. And I felt when I was writing those stories that I knew the women. They're all made up, but I could see them, I could hear them. And they wanted their stories told, and I felt I was doing it for them.
And you're a teacher as well. I mean, how important is teaching and education to you? Is there a connection between your role as a teacher and your work as a writer?
I think I get fed by teaching. When I'm teaching, I don't write. I hardly do any writing. But once I've finished, I find I want to write. And I also like the idea of being able to tell young people what I've learned. I just go in there and I give them what I know. I just tell them what I've experienced, what my experiences are. And I encourage them to begin to just love it. When I began to write, there was nothing to get. There were no prizes. Nobody was paying any attention to you. You just wrote because that's what you had to do. But if you have that love, that loving relationship with writing, it's a wonderful thing.
Now, Lorna, one of the great things that you do is reading out loud. And I know, because I've heard you many times, you're a wonderful reader and you have the most beautiful voice. And I know you're going to treat us now to a reading from one of your short stories. Could you tell us very quickly about that short story? And then when you're ready, give us a taster.
The story is titled I Come Through. And I'm a big, big fan of torch singers. Women, you know, like Billie Holiday and Diana Washington and all women who sing, you know, like that. I just love that.
Can you sing?
No, wish I could. And if I could sing, I wouldn't be a writer. The only reason I write is because I can't sing. And it's written in the voice of a woman who is a singer, a Jamaican singer. And she has been out of the game for a long time. And the story will explain why. The other night out at the inn on the ocean, when I finished singing, the place was just quiet, quiet. All you could hear was the waves slapping against the concrete wall, and it was like everybody in the place stopped breathing when I sing. I thought I'd touch bottom, but I was sinking in miry clay. The dark voice called, "You, I want you for my woman. You're going to be mine today." That's when I recall the promise that his reign was only for a time. I shout, "Get thee behind me, Satan. No, not me, not this time." And that's when I rise up like new. I come over, I give thanks, I come through. It took a little while before the applause started, then it went on like it would never stop. Wave after wave rolling up to the bandstand, sound waves washing my feet. Some of the women and the barmaid were crying. And a young girl in a blue dress who was sitting at a table with some people in this business, some people I personally have no use for, some people who mix up in some terrible things, jumps up as if she catches spirit and shouts out, "You sing for all of us, for all of us." At least an hour and a half passed before my manager knocked at the door of my hotel room. The girl in the blue dress was with him. My new manager was a very considerate young man. Knows by now that right after I finish a performance, I'm hungry enough to eat half a cow, although I don't really eat red meat. The other thing he knows is that when the applause starts,